Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you, and of course, here we are getting ready to, we're getting into Fed week, we're getting into the jobs week, we're getting into more BS, and the question is have the markets reached the top? Have we climbed to the top of the mountain? And the question is, I don't know. I'm not sure. It's hard to say. And of course, we've got so many things going on, and of course, you're seeing some major dissensions throughout the world. Of course, we saw, you know, last week's with the Frexit, and of course, on the tax spend by Donald Trump. And here we are moving in. And I think interesting, though, was the way that the that Amazon reacted. And again, I look at this as I did in the 90s, saying this cannot continue at this pace. It is illogical. It is a mathematical impossibility that it can continue. But again, I can't tell you when it's going to stop. That obviously, that is always the problem, is when does it stop? When is the overall era of this bubble going to pop? And nobody knows. I mean, that's really the case. I mean, you know, the Fed is doing their best job to inflate the bubble, blowing air into it, and continuing to try to inflate assets because, you know, why shouldn't you, at least, even though you're not richer, you should feel richer. And, you know, it's like the markets now, right? They move so much more, but and the opportunities are there. But in the meantime, based on real dollars, you're not making any more than you were making 30 years ago. So it's all just a bunch. It's just a big hoax. It's just a bunch of big BS that is created by the Federal Reserve, the greatest bubble creators in history. I mean, you know, listen, they created it, and that's why you've had a 36-year run in the bond market as interest rates continue to fall. All right, you know, we have these issues of trying to create more dollars. And why hell if I know? I mean, who needs more dollars? I mean, let's work with what we have. But of course, when you allow the government to float the debt ceiling, when you allow banks to lend out money that they don't have, and you continue to let these things happen, that's how you end up with bubbles, because you have to create more money to satisfy the old debt. I think they call it a Ponzi scheme. I'm not sure. But in the meantime, you've seen some ridiculous moves just about everywhere. I mean, if you take a look at the cattle markets, I mean, just explosions. It's interesting to watch how we see squeezes in different markets. And, you know, I think that what we're going to see here is potentially a major squeeze coming out of the Federal Reserve. I think that's, you know, I think their bullets are gone. I don't think they have enough to go. I think if they try to do anything else here, there might be a more serious revolt than what we're seeing right now. And I think this is, again, the issues that we see and that we have with some of the problems in general. And again, this is a view that if you don't realize what's going on, all right, well, you know, we have supposedly full employment, all right? Now, full employment of what? What kind of full employment do we have? We have a bunch of service jobs that are making minimum wage. So if that is satisfactory to you as full employment, well, okay, that's fine. I mean, it's not satisfactory to me. I mean, it doesn't affect me personally, but certainly it's going to affect everybody else. And certainly the lack of getting a healthcare plan together or getting these tax cuts done is a problem. And of course, this is where the thievery in Washington continues to move on, and yet we continue to fight over nonsense. Now, I have to say that it's become rather ridiculous where we stand when we have a system in place that does not allow the average guy to benefit from what's going on. We have a horrible healthcare plan that needs to be resolved. We have a group of politicians in Washington that are trying to prevent everything from happening. Now, you know, we've seen ideas, and we've seen protests that are being funded by, you know, behind the scenes by the George Soros of the world and others. And those are designed just to inflame everybody. Are we getting sick and tired of these things happening? I don't understand why we can't see it. I think it's pretty damn clear that the big money is controlling the little guys and actually paying them to be professional protesters. I mean, if they're not professional protesters, then tell them to go out and get a job. And I think that is exactly what they should do. But of course, why would you get a job when you can make more between the entitlements and getting paid to protest? I mean, you know, again, I don't know what's happened to America here, but certainly it should not be continually about how to railroad the system, because don't the people that are doing this understand that they're really only stabbing themselves, because the wealthy control the world. And if we want to get a voice back, then it has to be by stepping up and voting and becoming a common party instead of being so divided on both sides of the aisle. I mean, you know, again, I don't care who you vote for. I don't care if you're left or right. But, you know, at some point you have to make a decision. Is that political side worth more than having a country act as one, which is what was intended by the founding fathers? And, you know, we went to war in 1776 for less than we have right now. Do you realize that every time the government devalues, every time the Fed devalues your currency, they're taking money right out of your pocket? They're taxing you through a different way. I mean, you can look at it any way you want, but it certainly is a tax. But yet, here we are fighting to get taxed more. Don't you understand that all of these programs that we're paying for, it, the middle class pays for everything? That's why the economy is in so much trouble, as much as they'll have you try to believe differently, because the middle class isn't making enough money, because the middle class can't spend like it used to spend. That's why the debt is at record highs, bigger than the housing bubble. All right, but we continue to ignore it. These are you're getting put in positions to make a decision whether you're left or right, but your decision should be, I'm an American first, and I want America to be better, because it's better for me, it's better for my kids, it's better for my family to have a better shot and have the life that really works and have real politicians in there, not crooks stealing my money. Okay, that's the problem. That's the swamp that we're talking about. And you can see, can't you see it now? I mean, even we know there's some Republicans backstabbing in here as well. All right, I'm sure it'll come out eventually. But again, this is the whole deal. Again, it doesn't matter what you are. Hopefully, we're Americans. And that should be the number one party. All right, not anything else. And it should be, let's make it better and do things the right way. Anyways, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, I will step out here for a break, but you can go download the show at libertytalk.fm, as well as getting the Sporting Edge, and check out at bubbatrading.com, my brand new Bubba's Bottom Line. Always entertaining, always fun, and I look forward to you checking it out and giving me your opinion. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I will be right back after the break with Jane King from Why the Next Meeting. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba.
All right, boys, follow me, mostly in A.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show with my giggling guest, Jane King, Lila Max Media, the star, the one and only. What's up, Jane King?
Yeah, well, you can all, you know, if you didn't laugh, you cry. Like, you know, so I have to just, you know, keep laughing. That's what I keep saying.
You know, it is amazing. And I want, you know, obviously you are in the news. You understand the news. You've got, you know, probably one of the better backgrounds for the business that we are in. And, of course, we had, I guess let's start with the biggest story of the week, and that was the proposed tax cuts on Wednesday by Donald Trump. What was your take of the cuts? What did you think from your point of view, and what's your take going forward?
Well, I liked it. I mean, I know this still has to be negotiated, and there's issues here and there, but I think it's a great start. I mean, it's an aggressive start, and we need something aggressive and bold, I think, for our economy. And, of course, I love the fact that it seems to be stimulative. I mean, and it's not from the Federal Reserve. I mean, it's like an actual tax cut where small business owners can benefit. I mean, they've just been under so much regulation, and just, I mean, it felt like a smothering blanket in the last 8 years trying to grow a business. And now it feels like there's somebody kind of on your side, like the wind is with you. And, you know, I'm curious to see, we're probably not going to get down to 15% when it's all said and done, but it looks like there's a real serious now in trying to clean up the tax code, make it simpler. Somebody told me yesterday it was 70,000 pages, the tax code. I mean, unbelievable. It's ridiculous that it's that long. So there obviously needs to be something something simpler, and we can still, you know, make sure we have all the services we need from the government, but we're not just choking the economy too. So that is a great start.
And I do as well. Now, of course, you know, we know, you and I have talked about your senator there from New York, Schumer, right? And his first words were, well, it only benefits the rich. Now, what did you, do you agree with that? Do you think he's wacko? I mean, I know you like him, and I'm not saying you shouldn't like him. I'm just saying that, is that, do you see it from that point of view?
No, I don't. I think, I mean, small businesses, there are some wealthy small business owners, no doubt about it, but there's some that are struggling to pay the rent every month. In fact, there's probably more of them than there are wealthy small business owners. So, you know, that pass through that would be part of the tax reform, I think, is a great idea. I think that, you know, you're going to be able to take some extra money and hire somebody. What a concept. I mean, I would love to hire some people to help me, so I'm not getting up at midnight when I go to Las Vegas and helping the person here that is filling in for me. So I think, you know, I think he's wrong. I think that's going to be the Democrat, you know, line as this tax reform battle goes on. But I think it's wrong. There's child care tax credits in there. I mean, there's some things in there for middle-class people, too. And if we could stimulate the economy, that's going to be great for the middle class. I mean, where has the middle class gone in the past 20 years? Nowhere. And it's time to try something new. And I just think Schumer's wrong. He's got to say this stuff. I mean, you know, I don't even know if he believes it, half the stuff that he's saying anymore, if he's just catering to the base.
And that's my question to you. So why do the politicians believe they have to say things that aren't true, that really, I mean, because let's face it, the biggest drag on the economy for the last, you know, probably more than 8 years, but let's just say 8 years, was the inability for a small business guy to borrow money, which is why American Express earnings were so good, because most small businesses have an American Express card, so they're charging, they're getting money off of their charge card, because that's the only way they can survive. So, you know, don't we need jobs? Don't we need people to go to work and not so much government intervention?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's really, where is this going to go? I mean, if we would have, you know, Obama's policies, Democrat policies that would continue, I mean, we would just have stagnant growth. You have to let people have ideas and work on those ideas and hone them and fine tune them. I mean, that's where you get great businesses. It's not from all this taxing and regulation. I mean, that is definitely not the answer. I mean, and if you look like at everybody who's implemented those kinds of policies, none of them has ever started a business. I mean, they've never been in a position where they, you know, have to meet a payroll and, you know, deal with, you know, clients who aren't paying and, you know, all the stuff that small business people deal with. So Schumer's never done it. Obama's never done it. They just think that businesses are an endless supply of money, you know, to fulfill all their promises and dreams. And, you know, I'm just glad. I think this team, this economic team, is just really strong. And, you know, I hope, you know, I just hope it doesn't go overboard. I hope that, you know, we can really see small businesses grow and the middle class grow again.
And I agree. And here's one of my biggest problems. And I'm going to get your opinion. I believe that we really don't have true free markets and true price discovery anymore. I think we have more of a manipulated price discovery. And so it's not really, as you grew up on a farm in Indiana, that market was truly at that time free markets and price discovery. You grew it, you sold it, and you figured out a price that you can make money. I don't think we have that same type of market anymore. Do you agree or disagree, and why?
I think there are very few places where you have that anymore. You know, it's just, again, it's like governments trying to come in and protect people and from pain. And because free markets can be painful. I mean, they can be wonderful and they can make everybody smarter and sharper, but they can be painful too. So, you know, I just think, you know, not everybody can compete. And I think government's trying to kind of even the playing field a little bit. And it really just doesn't work in the end. I mean, you know, there's something I really think where the playing field needs to be evened is when it comes to education, and then let everybody kind of, you know, learn from there and make the choices and accept the repercussions as they come. I mean, I've been there, you know, I've, you know, made mistakes and had to pay for it. So, yeah, I think we got to let people be people and be creative and be innovative. And that's the way you get really vibrant economies. We owe it to future generations for that.
And I couldn't agree with you more. So that brings you to my next question. And that's the Common Core curriculum in school. Now, I say that a young person from New York shouldn't have the same curriculum as a young person from Mississippi or Alabama or from somewhere else. I mean, it's two completely different worlds, is it not?
Well, yeah. I mean, I grew up in Indiana, and my kids are growing up in New York. And, I mean, I tell them all the time that they do stuff that I didn't do until I was in my 30s. I mean, like, eat sushi and, you know, have Thai food and, you know, go to Europe. And, I mean, so they're definitely doing a lot of things. I think just kids are even, you know, no matter where you're from, they're more worldly these days than they were when I was growing up. But, yeah, my son's in fourth grade, so he's got his big test this year, and his results count toward middle school. So he's done the English. He's on his way to math. And, you know, it's funny because I sensed in the first few grades that they were really pushing the Common Core, and I don't sense it as much in fourth grade. And I don't know if it's just him getting older or if it's, you know, just Common Core is kind of, you know, losing its popularity. But he's doing math the way I learned math. And so I'm not sure what's going on there. I just want him to do well on the test.
I understand. And that's, of course, kind of, all right. So now, how's the, give us the latest update on your financial literacy for children program.
Oh, okay. So we're going to have a new podcast that will be published around May 10th, May 11th with Rachel Cruz. And she is the daughter of Dave Ramsey. And of course, many people familiar with Dave Ramsey. She's kind of following in his footsteps. And talking about, you know, money management and kids. She's got all these really cool ideas of ways to save money for kids. Like, I'll give you a little hint. So, like, instead of going out and buying all new sports equipment, I mean, look on Craigslist. You know, just think of ways to cut down on all the spending that we do. And she's just a great guest, so she's going to be on in May. And working on some other people, too. So, you know, I'm thinking, Todd, maybe you could co-host a podcast with me.
I would love to.
Someday. Instead of being a guest, you could be a co-host.
I would love to. To be on the same airwaves with you as a co-host, it would be an honor to be on with Jane King from Lila Mex Media.
Next time you're in New York, we'll work that out.
That would be awesome. And Jane King, you are awesome. Lila Mex Media, the Ka-Ching Report. You always bring great things to the show, and I always appreciate having you on, Jane. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
And that's our friend, Jane King, the Ka-Ching Report. And you got to check that report out, and you can always see it at BubbaTrading.com. We post it every Friday. But in the meantime, check out Jane. She's coast to coast, and many of you might have seen her on TV doing a lot of special stuff. But she's really working hard on her financial literacy, and I actually can't wait to go help her co-host one of those podcasts, because, as you know, I'm a big believer in financial literacy for children as well. And I think that is one of the issues and things we've left undone. I think it's something that needs to be taken care of, and certainly I'd like to be a part of it. So in the meantime, go check out highschoolinvesting.com while you're waiting. See what I'm doing, and let's get it done. But in the meantime, go download the Bubba Show at libertytalk.fm, and as well as the Sporting Edge, which is being hosted by Xander and having a great time doing it. We're going to step out here for a break. We're going to be back with Matt Demeter after the break from DemeterResearch.com. The Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz. We're coming right back to you after the break. The Bubba Show. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for the Bubba Show expert, the technical analyst of Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. What's up, Mr. Demeter?
I'm doing well. How about you, Todd?
Well, I'm doing well, except that, you know, I just don't understand. And I don't care if the market goes up or down. Obviously, we trade. We need volatility more than anything else. But I'll tell you what really irritated me last week, Matt, was the intraday ranges were like putrid. You had a 400 Monday and Tuesday were a 400-point rally, but in the meantime, intraday, where most people would be trading, you had less than 50 points of action in both days. I don't get it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the gaps overnight were just, yeah, they were difficult to deal with. And then you would just, you know, it would be a gap and hold day. You know, you'd chop and then you'd wait. And then the next day, yeah, you'd have another big move. But it's difficult for traders to deal with that kind of action.
Now, does that affect your charts at all? In other words, like, for example, in the Dow future, obviously, it's continuous, so you just chart that all the way through, I assume. But if you're trading the Dow Industrial Average and you're charting that, well, obviously, you have major gaps. Has it changed the way that you look at certain things when you see that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, if you know that if on, you know, either an ETF or or the index itself, you'll end a day at a certain spot and you'll know, well, you know, if we go above that, we'll stop out. If you're trading the futures, you're lucky because then you can you have the opportunity to stop out based upon, you know, you hit a certain resistance line. You can stop out in the futures if it goes too high. So yeah, it affects the way I look at it. The futures, I chart those for most indices, and you know, it did help, you know, when we were breaking out of certain resistance, you know, short-term resistance levels. But other than that, I like to chart the indices because they're the main thing, and you know, overnight action in I don't really care that much about volume, but overnight action in futures has, you know, typically lighter volume, so I don't know if it has the same importance.
Right, it's pretty thin, and of course, unless you have a Brexit or whatever, then it's pretty thick. But so we're looking now, and of course, volatility is now it's very close, and probably, I don't know what your thoughts are, but it's probably going to make an all-time new low. I would suspect it, what's going on, because now, I mean, you know, we were rolling along nicely, and the chart on the volatility looked good. Now that just collapsed, and of course, we're back down around that 10 level in the VIX. So, what do you see there?
I think we could get down to about 9. I'm looking for about 9.8, 9.6, something like that. So I don't think that would be an all-time low, but it would be close, and maybe we could get to an all-time low. I wouldn't see any problem with that. I think these levels of volatility are ridiculous, but we did, you know, start noticing a week ago or a week and a half ago, basically, that when volatility was elevated, that VIX option traders were selling puts more expensively than calls. So VIX puts were more expensive, which hadn't been the case for months. And it was our first signal that, you know, volatility might be ready to, you know, fall. Now it's reversed again. So now VIX calls are more expensive, meaning that the option traders believe that
the VIX is going to rise.
Yeah, VIX will rise. Yeah. That volatility is underpriced. So,
I got to ask you this question. So you've been charting these markets for a long time. The all-time low was 939, by the way, at the end of 2005. But,
right.
All right. So now, if I said to you that the new volatility, the new VIX number, that probably should be probably around, you know, 13 or 14 or 15 anyways, because there isn't that much reason to see major volatility anymore anyways because of the way everything's designed. Would you agree, disagree, or tell me I'm nuts?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, I think that there's probably more potential for sort of black swan events, you know, where you have all these algorithms, if they all, you know, feed off of each other and, you know, cause it's really hard for me to know. It's not a bunch of individuals. It's not a bunch of individuals making decisions. It's computers making decisions off of what other computers do. And if they all say sell at the same time, then you can see volatility spike higher than we've ever seen it before. So I don't really know what to expect from that side of things, what the algos will do together.
Right.
I think the idea is that they make it less volatile, and if that's true, then yeah, I agree that we, you know.
I just remember, you know, if you go back, listen, obviously, if you go through the evolution of the options market, which is where the VIX comes from. Obviously, you know, back in the 70s, they didn't have put options. You only had call options. So you had to trade back and forth. And in those days, you know, an at-the-money call or put would be, well, it wasn't puts, but an at-the-money call would be trading it over a dollar with 5 minutes to go, and people were buying them. So, you know, we've kind of had an evolution everywhere else. And I'm just wondering if the new level of volatility is no longer, you know, the moving averages is 20, but, you know, we haven't seen a steady hold over 20 for a long time. And of course, what's the commercials doing with the VIX right now?
Yeah, that's on this last spike up in volatility, which wasn't that impressive. We only got up to what, 17s. They were sellers there. They sold again last week, and they're now down to about 65,000 contracts long, net long. They have motivation to see higher volatility, but we're no longer near the 100,000 contract level, which is what I consider extreme. So for right now, I don't think they are anticipating, you know, major volatility. I think we're looking probably at another week or two. And then I think if they start adding again, then that'll be a good sign that that they see higher volatility coming.
And how do they stand in their short positions in the general futures?
That's what's, you know, that's really weird. They've lightened up on volatility, but they've increased their short positions in across the board. Dow, they're still very close to a record short position in Dow futures. NASDAQ, they've been adding on. That might be getting close to a record, actually. I need to check that. But they're very heavily short NASDAQ, and NASDAQ's only been going up, and they've been shorting into that. So that's strength. So.
Well, to your credit, you called it that it was still going up, and you've been on top of that since the beginning. So kudos to you for being on top of the NASDAQ and saying that it's going to go higher when everybody else is trying to sell it. Now, what I'm thinking maybe is maybe the commercials agree with me that volatility is not that important anymore, and I think maybe they might have seen something in the last move. But again, it doesn't matter. It is what it is. But overall, I think they believe, and I actually believe, that they have a bigger shot and a better chance to make a lot more money by being short the futures now, because it just doesn't seem to think that we get enough volatility, but we could get some actual down movement and get it to sustain itself and actually see a break in this market. Now, I don't know from where do you stand right now in the overall view of the market?
Well, I don't think anything's been, as far as the S&P and Dow go, I don't think their bearish patterns have been harmed at all. We got up close to the March 1st highs in S&P and Dow, but they've you know, gotten over, they've remained oversold on the longer term indicators. Those really haven't come off at all. The monthly, the weekly indicators are still just as overbought as they have been. The dailies are now back to neutral to slightly overbought. So, you know, everything lines up for, I don't expect them to go much higher. I think that, you know, S&P and Dow, they could go another 1% to the upside and not harm their bear patterns. So, you know, in the S&P, that would be 24.20. And that wouldn't be a problem. Beyond 24.20, I would start seeing the bear pattern break. And then I would say, okay, you know, for whatever reason, we're going higher. There's another target that I have. It's closer to 2,500. I really don't expect that to be something we're going to get this time. But
if we get it, you can find me at the mortuary.
Right. I don't think there's a whole lot more to go in those two indices. The NASDAQ, I'm having a hard time figuring. I mean, right here where we are around 6,050, that works. That could work as a top two. The NASDAQ, I'm not going to touch it from the short side. It's way overbought in the monthly, indicators, but I'm not interested in it based upon what I'm seeing with the price action. As far as a short, Russell popped a little bit higher to a new high last week as well. It's been had a monster rally over the past 2 weeks. I think it just got so, you know, relatively on a relative basis oversold to the other indices that it broke higher. I don't think it's going much higher. I think IWM max upside there is 144. Beyond 144, then you're going to see a real breakout in Russell. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to get a good sell-off. The commercial shorted, you know, pretty heavily into the move up in the Russell, and I don't think they anticipated, you know, going in their face that far.
Well, we didn't anticipate it either. I mean, you know, quite frankly, I mean, it was rather shocking that it went from the pig and the weakest and like the easy short, because every time you sold, you just made money, and to all of a sudden we open your eyes and they're making record highs. I thought that was interesting as well. And to me, that indicates a lot of things going on. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about that, because I thought there was some interesting action in Amazon and Google on their earnings. But this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with the Bubba Show, expert of technical analysis and one of the sharpest guys, one of the best callers of markets I've seen, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. We're going to stop out here for a break, but make sure you go to LibertyTalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge, which is doing great. And thanks to all you. And we'll be back after the break with more from Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, coming right back to you. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. He is the Bubba Show's exclusive analyst on technicals and really does a super job. And you should check out his website, DemeterResearch.com. All right, Matt. So we had last week, you know, we had interesting action. I mean, it kind of sucked, but it was interesting. But I've kept feeling that like Thursday might be a watershed moment. You had Google and Amazon's earnings coming out, and Amazon had blew it out of, I guess, the ballpark. And I never look at the numbers, but you can see by the way it's trading, and it was up like at 980 or 970. And by the time he came in Friday morning, Amazon was already kind of coming a little bit. It was like 935. And I think the market would have been open another hour. It would have closed lower on the day. Google gave up a little bit of its gains. And Baidu totally reversed, and a couple of the others. And it just, to me, that looks like maybe there's something there now. What did you see in there? I know you don't typically watch that stuff, but what did you think?
No, I saw that too. I saw the Amazon move, and it does, I don't actually have a long-term chart up in front of me, but that reversal did look pretty significant. It looked like it could have been a spike top. So, you know, that would make – if the NASDAQ – as I said before, the NASDAQ should be at a top. These companies like these have been moving, you know, the big top 10 stocks of NASDAQ 100 have been moving the NASDAQ and the NASDAQ 100. And those could very well be reversal points. I haven't looked at it in detail yet, though. I know what you're talking about.
Listen, I get it. I remember trading through the 90s. I don't know if you were trading then yet, but I mean, you know, I was short Yahoo. I almost went broke, and I knew it was going down. I mean, all those crappy CMGI and everything was ridiculous. I mean, it was JDS Uniphase. It was nuts.
Yeah, but I remember those. Yeah,
it's kind of reminding me of the cattle markets now. I mean, those things are like ridiculous. I can't say never, but I mean, mm-hmm. I've seen them move now in these markets, and I understand up. And I understand a market moving up. But what I do not understand is a mass explosion consistently going straight up with no signs of relief. And, you know, and again, I'm not a news guy, so I don't care. But it had very bearish news. But basically, the cattle has gone up about 12% in, you know, 10 days, which is a sickening move in those markets, especially what's going on. And I know you were bullish cattle or bullish the meats. What do you think? What do you think of that move?
Well, it was definitely what I couldn't anticipate, you know, the basically the straight up nature of it. But we were bullish. And like I said, I know how much I like COW as an ETF that allows me to chart these more easily. And, you know, the target we've been talking about is 25.35 as a minimum target. And we got to 24.20, so I think, you know, hey, I think it's going higher. I don't know that it's at all justified, but I think it's got more to go to the upside. I can see, you know, I'm looking at daily RSI. It's almost at 80. I mean, it's way overbought. I think if it's going to, you know, make these additional gains, it's going to have to, you know, consolidate first. I don't think it can just, you know, continue to go straight up.
I don't know. It's been doing a pretty damn good job, but now,
yeah, so far.
You know, I bought a leveraged silver ETF last week, and I don't know, you didn't know this yet, but I'm speaking in New York this week at a panel with Kitco and a couple others on gold and obviously what the Trump effect and the other things. What do you see in the metals right now?
Well, I think the gold is, right now, on a short-term basis, in between levels. I don't think it's sitting on top of its 200-day moving average. If this is a heavily manipulated market, as you know, if the commercials shove it below its 200-day moving average, you could really get a good sell-off going because that's when managed money will come in and they'll dump, and that's the goal of the commercials is to manipulate the managed money traders. Switching over to silver, I'm thinking silver is much closer to a bottom. It's actually much more oversold than gold is, and it looks to be closer to a bottom than here. It's on important support. If it breaks much further, that will be a negative for the longer term. But for the shorter term, it's just very oversold. I think silver should be moving to the upside, and gold, they're both going to generally go in the same direction. So gold may bounce here, and then we'll get another sell off later. But long story short, I'm short gold, I'm long silver, and by doing that, that's what I see technically. But also, we have the gold silver ratio at 74, which is, you know, it's in the ballpark of, you know, historical norms, but that's high. It's like way overdone. So I'm a much, you know, bigger bull of silver than gold, but I'm bullish both.
Right. I get it. I mean, yeah, I get it. I do believe in the ratio. And of course, if we're going to need gold and silver, we better be buying some more silver here because you need smaller mm-hmm. You need smaller increments if you're going to have to pay something. For you have to pay a bill with it. So what are you seeing in the currencies? Of course, the dollar has been under a little pressure. And of course, we have the Fed this week. And you tie that with the bonds and the yield curve. I mean, things are a little quirky here, but I know you believe the dollar was going lower, which I do. And I still think it's going lower. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's broken important support. So I think that there's not the next major support down comes in the mid 90s, still about in the 95s. It's about 95, say 95.50 is what I'm targeting. And then on the flip side, because the euro is such a big component of the dollar index, I would think that the euro is trying to get to about 113, 114 area. I'm still bearish on the dollar and bullish on the euro. It's get, you know, they're both, the dollar is oversold, euro is overbought. it can continue a little while longer, and I think it will. It may take a little more time. Again, we may need to consolidate just to relieve the indicators a little bit, but basically, I'm still bearish dollar.
Well, no, I would expect. I wrote in my newsletter over the weekend. I just said I expect to see a little bit of bounce in the dollar because I want to sell more. Yeah. I think you're going to find a sellable bounce. If we get back to 100 or 101. I think that's probably a pretty good sellable spot. And of course, the bulls are still out in oil, and of course, oil keeps going down. Of course, it did bounce a little bit, which is you kind of called the area where it's going to bounce from. But overall, I don't see any reason that it's going to hold here. I would not at all be surprised to see a bounce to 51 or so. But I'd be looking to sell it. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm a bear longer term. I'm a bear on oil. Like every rally in oil, I think is a sale. It's just what levels specifically we're looking for. I think we came close to my higher target that we talked about. I think around the high 47s at this point, and we came close, didn't quite get there, but we went ahead and put on a small bullish position there. There's much stronger support coming in. It's still in the 44s. It's rising by about 7 cents per day. So we'd be buyers. We're more or less more bullish down here than bearish. But yeah, we're gonna look to get out in the mid 50s, low to mid 50s. I think there's it's an awesome short if we can get it back to the high 50s. So if we're talking about 57. Ish, that's where I want to be selling it.
Okay, no, again,
selling it short.
No, I understand what you're saying. Again, I don't see any reason. I think this has been somewhat manipulated by itself. Just of course, a lot of these commodities are somewhat stroked anyway. So, it's not really that big of a deal. But then of course, the grains. Wheat and corn kind of came off the deck. Soybeans kind of remains flat, and your stance has been of recent vintage. Bearish beans, bullish wheat, but you thought that beans could bounce a little bit last week. But what's your thought now?
Well, I mean, yeah, they've so far held support for a couple weeks. Soybeans have, and it really hasn't. The bounce that could have happened really, hasn't materialized very much. So I think it's really just consolidating for another move lower. I remain bearish just because we haven't hit, my ultimate target low. But I like the action out of wheat. I mean, wheat went back down to its rising support from the lows of the last year. And it came close.
Yeah,
and,
I got you. No,
and,
I mean,
it held, and it held, and I like that. So I think that's it confirms that that wheat is looking healthier here than corn or soybeans to me.
I agree, Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. As always, thank you so much for being here.
It's always great to be here. Thanks, Todd.
This was Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com, the Bubba Show analyst of technicals. And, of course, that'll do it for today. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Turn the quiet up.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.